Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private pay therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hey there, welcome to session 66 of Selling the Couch. Hope today's podcast finds you doing really well. For some reason, there is a ton of rain. So as I'm recording this, if you can hear some rain in the background, I'm hoping not, but it's raining really loud here. Just noticed that. Today's podcast is actually a really cool topic and one I think that a lot of clinicians are trying to balance, which is this idea of being a parent and trying to run a private practice. And my guest today is Dr. Robin Norris. Robin is a marriage and family therapist down in Sterling, Virginia, and she has been navigating this world of being a private practitioner and being a parent to two kiddos. And in today's session of Selling the Couch, we're going to learn some of the really practical things that Robin has done and the steps that she's taken in order to both build a successful private practice, but one that didn't come at the expense of being an awesome parent. So we're going to cover a lot of really practical things from scheduling between kids' activities and scheduling with clients. How do you account for any like day-to-day emergencies with both clients and with the kiddos if something happens at school or they get sick or anything like that? And some of the real lessons that Robin learned along the way that maybe she thought initially some of those steps that she was taking that she thought, you know, that's going to be really helpful. But in looking back, she found out was not very helpful. So here is my conversation with Dr. Robin Norris from windwardoptimalhealth.com. Hey, Robin, welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hi, Melvin. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's been nice to, you know, I always find it awesome when I can move from an email to actually talking to someone. And I feel like this topic that we're talking about today, it's really going to resonate with a lot of folks.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it.
You know, the topic we are talking about, this idea of balancing private practice with being a parent. And I thought one of the first places we could just start with was, even before you started thinking about private practice, as you began to even think about it, but also knew that you wanted to be, you know, a parent, what are two things that you really thought about with regard to balancing those two roles?
For me, the most important parts were to be able to have the flexibility with the kids and the practice, and to have a backup plan for emergency coverage. When you're in your own private practice and you've got your client responsibility and you've got your children's responsibility, you really want to think through, you know, what an emergency plan can be if you need to be in one spot or the other.
Yeah, I like about like how you're thinking about those in like two different levels. So I thought we could even just start with that second part. So tell me a little bit more about like the emergency coverage part.
Sure. I'm actually the leader of a group practice, so I have multi-layered coverage. And what that means is I see clients, and if I was out sick, I would have to have a backup plan of a colleague covering cases in that manner. And then I also supervise students. So for me, when I went into the private practice, I was actually pregnant with my second daughter at the time and knew I had an upcoming, you know, delivery. And so I reached out to other private practitioners outside of even my office to make sure I had the most consistent coverage for the time that I would be gone. While I was gone, I actually even got, unfortunately, a little bit ill post-delivery. And so I was very, very, very grateful for all of the planning I had done ahead of time, because I knew not only my supervisees, not only my colleagues in the group and the awesome admin folks that I had working for us, but that there was coverage for all of it in terms of supervision.
It sounds like you really thought about it on multiple layers. So one, like just as a clinician thinking about covering for your clients, and it sounds like you reached out to someone that was in your practice, right?
Actually, I didn't. I actually reached out to three other clinicians in other practices because I wanted the folks in my practice to know they had another layer in case there was something that was worrying them about me. I wanted them to have a safe space to go to. I wanted to have some other colleagues to cover, like I said, both my caseload if need be, but even more so their feelings about me not being here.
I just appreciate like how mindful you are of your colleagues and the people that work for you.
Right. Thank you. It's an important piece because I think sometimes we see other practitioners, I've been said, you know, oh my gosh, there's competitiveness out there. I said, but they're colleagues too. You know, we're all in this to help people. And so that's the part that I think we do very well here.
Yeah. And I think, I'm not saying like everyone does this, but I imagine like if someone were in this scenario and they had like multiple clinicians, I guess as a business owner, they would just think, okay, I got to get this like taken care of. Let me just like, you know, let me just ask somebody that's in the practice, but you taking that extra step and thinking about, let me take this outside of the practice so that I don't put that extra burden on the other clinicians that are going to be here.
Right. Because some of my clinicians were licensed at the time, and then some of the clinicians were doing their residencies. And so I wanted to make sure that if I wasn't here, that all of their residency hours would be covered, that any quandary they might come into or any concern they might have was with, you know, not just their peer colleagues here, but also really seasoned veteran supervisors. So.
Right. And then you said the other piece was that you had some folks that you were supervising. So how did you figure out who in terms of coverage for that?
Well, luckily, it was a planned pregnancy with lots of time ahead. So I looked to other folks that might have the comparable licensing that they needed, and I called them and then followed up with a quick email. And I basically asked them, I said, you know, I'm leaving on maternity leave. I intend to come back mid-September. So I'm looking at about 2.5 months off. And would it be possible that, you know, my residents reach out to you? And if any of the clinicians in the office need to reach out for case consultation, do you feel like you're comfortable doing this? And the 3 out of 3 that I asked are absolutely awesome people. And they totally stepped up and said, not a problem.
Oh, so you batted 1,000.
Yes, I did. Thankfully so. I was like, oh boy, one more thing on my list. Oh no. But no, it made me feel very comfortable to be able to step out of my role as the group leader, you know, to tend to my family. So.
Yeah. Were these, you had relationships with these clinicians beforehand, or how did you form that relationship?
I did. I had met them through Northern Virginia Licensed Professional Counselor Organization. And over time, I had just heard them, you know, whether it be at presentations or whether I had met them at networking events. Sometimes these were folks that had specialties that I had referred to. Like I myself do not do things with eating disorders, but one person does. And so I just had felt comfortable with the styles that they had and the presentation that they were over a course of time. So yeah, it seemed like a next logical step for me to reach out to these folks.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And you said the second aspect was just thinking about schedule, and especially with like balancing that with kids and with your clients. How did you like manage that, and what things have you done?
I would definitely say it's an artwork still being performed. Because as my children are growing, their needs are different. So when they were younger and not as mobile, it was one balance of the schedule. And then as they went off to preschool, it was another level. And now we're in kindergarten for some. One of the things that I actively chose to do was to not have my practice in the town where I'm raising my children. That was a big leap for me because I kind of projected ahead and really thought about some of the intimate in discussions that we had have in our counseling sessions, and these can be community members. So for the sake of my children growing up, I needed to be, my minimum was at least a half hour away from the town where I'm raising them. And so then that adds into a childcare piece. So my absolutely fabulous mother-in-law stepped up and has always been available a couple of days a week so that I can kind of mold in and around that. I also have to say that sittercity.com has been fabulous for finding the Mary Poppins in my lives.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that website.
Oh, yeah. Sittercity.com has so many great high school students and college students and women that are stay-at-home moms. And you can really craft your childcare to your own needs. So there were times, and still quite often, where I just need somebody from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock on Thursday so that I can do something business plan or so that I can do something in a meeting. And it's not, for me, a comprehensive daycare need, but it's just that flexibility to be able to say, wow, how can I still be a business mom and a counselor and, you know, still enjoy my kids?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, one of the things I was just thinking, like, so at a practical level, do you set aside, for example, like Wednesday from 11 to 2 is a time that I always have blocked off for clients? Or how does that work, like just on a day-to-day or even a week-to-week?
Sure. So for me, my practical level is that I am available to clients between 10 o'clock and 4 o'clock on Mondays and between 11 o'clock and 6 o'clock on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And then I leave the mornings and a little bit of slush time on Thursday afternoons and Friday afternoons for doing more of the business things, working more on the business rather than in the business. Mm. And then that gives me the flexibility to see my children in the morning, to see my children in the evening, and then to have Thursday morning and Friday mornings be with my kids. So again, it has crafted over time. And it's malleable. You know, you try to put your limiters on. When I first started, I was working the late night hours. I had always worked the late night hours. I had worked weekends. I mean, you know, I've been in this field in some form of capacity for about 20 years now. Mm. And so I was used to that. But then it was like, oh, no, I have these really cool little beings in my house and I want to be home for them, too. So,
yeah, I mean, that's one of the, I just think about like the other conversations I've had with folks and just that, I think that's one of the nice things about private practice is that we can build it according to how we envision it, you know, instead
Absolutely.
Of like how someone else kind of envisions it for us.
Absolutely. So for some folks, I know one colleague, he works from 9 o'clock to 2 o'clock. Mm. So he's got his afternoons off for his children. I have another colleague friend who works a couple hours in the morning, takes a giant chunk in the afternoon, and then does a couple hours in the evening. And so we're all kind of running at about 20 hours a week caseload. And then, you know, to own a business and supervise the group, you add a couple, 5 to 10 more hours a week in. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You can craft it to any day of the week, to any hour of the day you want it to be.
Yeah. How often do you modify your schedule? Is it based on like the kids' academic year or how does that work usually or seasons or?
Well, actually, this is the first full academic year I've had. Mm. So my daughters are 2.5 and 5.5. And so it's thankfully getting modified based on the academic year. I haven't had to modify too much based on snow days, but that is something, depending on the region you live, you need to consider. Mm. You know, what is your backup plan for when your child has a delayed opening or when you have a snow day? You know, because we can predict out when school calendar is. That's easy. But when it comes to the weather things, you know, it might be a good enough day for you to go to the office, but not a good enough day for those buses to drive. So you really do have to kind of consider both weather and the school schedule. Right now, I run primarily off the school calendar and the school schedule.
Okay. I feel like this is going to be an issue like that I'll run into here being in the Northeast and having snow. And how do you like, I guess, how do you account for like snow and, you know, delayed openings and all that?
Well, for me, I've tried my best to put client hours at later than what a delayed opening would be. So even if my daughter has a delayed opening, that would get her on a bus by 9:15. Mm. That would make sure that I wouldn't be seeing any clients earlier than 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. So I don't start earlier than that because anything can happen. You know, they can forget the green day shirt that they needed driven to school for a green eggs and ham day. And I kid you not, that was last week. So
I was going to say, this sounds like this happened.
We always have something in our household. So, but that, again, that's the wonderful, beautiful balance of it, is that you really do have to add some more cushion in when children are involved. And again, you just have to have that backup plan. I remember when I first started last September, where she just went off to school and it was like, whew, we're all good. Everybody's gone. Everybody's out. And I'm pretty much like the third or fourth contact person on the emergency contact list, because my husband works from home and he's closer, and the neighbors are closer, and my mother-in-law is more capable of answering the phone than I am when I'm in session. And you are going to have those moments, though, where it's, sure enough, she came home, you know, ill from school once and once only this year, and I get this note slipped under my door while I'm in session, and I choose not to read it until the end, and I call the school, and sure enough, they'd called me first. I said, why? Just because I have mom on my name? And, you know, I said, but there was an order to it, you know, and there's an order for the reason, because I am 45 minutes away. You know, I don't have the kind of job where I'm at a desk where I can answer my phone all the time. I do respect my client hours. That's their time. So,
yeah, I mean, there's even just that little thing. There's so much wisdom to like doing that, because, you know, you're saying your clients are important, right? But even like at a practical level, like having other people that are there that can be emergency contacts. So I guess,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's so spouses, in-laws.
Spouses, moms, dads, in-laws, grandparents, grandparents of the neighbors, working home moms. I mean, it is a village. Mm. And if you think you can do this without a village, you're being absolutely silly and you're going to end up burning out. It is so, so important to be able to find other working moms who may be single moms. And if you're a single mom, or two single dads can swap hours, because you don't have to be partnered, or you don't have to have a spouse, but you do have to have a sense of community. Mm. So everybody gets to define where you find that community.
Just transitioning a little bit, what are some, I feel like this is a system that's like constantly being refined, as you said, but what are some of those like big mistakes that you made when it came to kind of finding that balance between being a clinician and being a parent in terms of like scheduling and just in general?
Yeah, it's thinking that I can do it all. That's mistake number one.
Well, I imagine that one is like a common struggle, because most of us are small business owners. We're fiercely independent, right?
Right.
And
right.
We feel like we can do it all.
Yeah, and it wasn't that I thought I could do it better than others, but I was just always used to being the one to do it all. Mm. You know, before I had children, I did do it all, you know? And so that's where really waking up and saying, okay, what support do I need and what does that look like? Mm. And, you know, sometimes that might mean, okay, I need to hire somebody to do billing, and I hired a fabulous person to do billing. But some other times it might mean, well, I do need somebody to watch my children for 2 hours, because at this point I'm choosing, you know, I've got somebody to do billing, so that's time gained with my children. But then there's this really cool meeting I want to go to, that's time lost with my children, but I feel very comfortable with who's watching them. So you're constantly, you know, on, I would say every 2 weeks, reevaluating what the timing looks like and when those needs are needing to be balanced, because you're no longer just your own entity. You're no longer your own entity if you partner up or if you marry somebody, but you're really never your own entity when you have children. Mm. So
that first mistake was then just thinking you could do it on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, oh, I've got nap time. I can totally do something during nap time.
Right.
Well, nap time doesn't last forever. And you're pretty tired. And you kind of need nap time too sometimes. You know, not realizing the amount of sleep loss that can happen. Mm. I was never a night person. I was always a morning person. And I loved, you know, when we talk about the miracle morning, I didn't have miracle mornings anymore, because I had somebody that had their version of their miracle morning, which involved diapers and different needs to be met. So for me, the most important part was realizing I cannot do this alone, nor should I have to, because there's so many awesome people that can support you.
Yeah. Even I just hear you talk about it, and I can just sense like even having that realization that you can do it, that was very liberating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I really just thought, if I work harder, if I work more hours, if I, you know, I've got between midnight and 2, I can do this. Mm. No, that's silly.
Yeah. Right.
I couldn't do that.
Right.
It didn't last long.
Right. Well, so then that schedule, the feeling like you can do it on your own, that was one. What's like another common thing or a common mistake that you think you made early on?
again, trying to really think that you have downtime even when there's a competent, awesome person in the presence of your children. I have a great example of that where, you know, I've got just the best college student, Tori, right now working with me, and she's doing some art project with the kids downstairs, and I'm on a conference call upstairs with a colleague. And all of a sudden, I hear, I'm stuck. I'm like, what, huh? And I look, and there's these little fingers under the door. And I'm like, oh, what? Oh. Well, my 5.5-year-old had come upstairs and decided she was going to send me an I love you note underneath the door. Oh. And she got her fingers caught under the door. So I had to say to the colleague, I apologize. I will call you back in about 10 minutes. You know, and I quickly grab Vaseline. I'm getting little fingers out. And it's those moments where if there's really something very, very important, it can't really be done in the same house as the kids. I would never try to do client sessions. I know that there's some colleagues I have that will try to do a client session during nap time or make a client phone call during nap time. That's edging for me because I don't think that you're ever in one space or the other once you're home and in the presence of your children, even if you've got really awesome people watching your kids.
So you set a pretty firm boundary.
I really have. So if there's an important meeting I need to attend, even if it's a virtual meeting, I leave. I leave the house. I will go work from the library. I will go work from Starbucks. I do not do virtual sessions from home. I do those in the office. I treat them as if they're regular sessions in the office. Because I think that as we grow and as we become this global mobile society, it becomes more easy to, I'll just catch it on the fly in between my kid's soccer game in the car.
Yeah.
Well, but that I don't think honors the client's space, and it doesn't honor our time for downtime or honor the value we have for our children. So for me, early on, realizing, wow, you know, even though my children are fine with the person in the house that they're with, my brain still isn't 100% connected.
Yeah.
So removing myself from that space was really important.
Yeah, no, that's a really smart strategy. Anything else that you can kind of think of?
Again, I just can't express enough that it's a team. When you're raising children, it's a team, you know, and it's not just the school team or your family team or your friends team, but you might have to extend out. I had never heard about Sitter City, so I walked into a daycare center that my children weren't going to, and I said, I'm new to this town. If I need to find a babysitter, how do I do this? You know, I didn't know anybody in the neighborhood. And that's where it just becomes you build your own village.
Yeah. I think I love the perspective that you take because you are even though it is still a work in progress, you're finding that balance between valuing the work that you do and valuing your family.
Absolutely. Because I really can't put one higher than the other. I can't. And I know that maybe some folks would say, well, of course you need to put your children, but I've been a professional as a counselor for so many years. And as a therapist, it defines me. It's more than a career. It transcends who I am. So, you know, I'm a mom and I'm a therapist, but I'm also a therapist who's a mom. So I can't separate those two.
Not at all, to put you on the spot or anything like that. But how do you think having that balance has helped you to, in terms of your role as a clinician?
I think it's been fabulous because it's really made me understand folks to another level. When I didn't have children, I could empathize to a certain degree and I could understand hardship to a certain degree, but there's a whole nother level of, you know, needing to attend and really understanding the client's needs when they're talking about, you know, work-life balance, or they're talking about their children or their someday want of children, or the fact that they don't have children, but nobody understands why they don't want to have children. I mean, there's just another whole level of comprehension that I never got from my books as a family therapist. So
yeah, I mean, I think it sounds like it just gives you a new appreciation.
Absolutely. It's a completely new perspective.
Very cool. Robin, thank you again so much for doing this. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I feel like this is going to really help a lot of folks that are thinking about finding this balance of being in practice and raising a family.
Sure. Thank you, Melvin. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
What are some of the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. You can find me through the internet at windwardoptimalhealth.com. Again, that's windwardoptimalhealth.com. And you can always just email me at info@windopt.com.
Awesome. And I'll definitely put that in the show notes. Robin, thank you again so much for doing this and take good care.
Sure. Thanks, Melvin.
Hey, what's up? I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Robin, and I hope that it has been helpful in helping you to navigate that world of being a parent and being a private practitioner as well. One of the things that Robin mentioned after our conversation was this phrase, and it stayed with me, and I wanted to share it with you. She said, every day should have humor, hugs, tears, and talk. And I just thought, what a beautiful way of putting that in and navigating that journey of being a parent as well as being a clinician. One of the other resources that Robin mentioned after our conversation was she's a big fan of Evernote, which I'm a big fan of Evernote as well. So if you have never heard of Evernote, the easiest way to explain it is if you're on a laptop, for example, and you type something into Evernote, it allows you to then see that document on other devices like your smartphone and stuff like that. It syncs it. But you can also do some really cool stuff with Evernote, everything from presentations to just clipping inspiration that you find on the internet and putting it into different folders. It's just a cool organization software. Show notes to today's episode can be found at sellingthecouch.com/session66. If you'd like to continue the conversation about navigating this world of parenting and being a clinician, feel free to join us in the Selling the Couch Facebook community. You can join that at sellingthecouch.com/community. Have a great rest of your week, and I will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in the quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop.